Talk Business Arkansas is brought to you by the Arkansas Farm Bureau, the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas, Noble Strategies, the Arkansas Healthcare Association, and Delta Trust and Bank.
Roby Brock, welcome to today's Talk Business Arkansas update. Some new jobs for North Central Arkansas and some new looks at the American and Arkansas economy. Let's run through our business headlines. Global Food Group will locate a new manufacturing and packaging facility in Clinton, Arkansas, investing $4.7 million, adding 224 new jobs to the region. The company makes products such as retail sandwiches, quesadillas, tortillas, and burritos. Global Food Group's customers include Associated Grocers, Super Value, Harps, and Food Giant. Two closely watched barometers of national economic conditions present different pictures of economic activity. It's yet another page in the ongoing story of economic uncertainty. The American Trucking Association's truck tonnage index for January was up 2.9%, following a revised 2.4% increase in December. However, the Cass Freight Index had a different take on January freight shipments. The index, which measures more than just goods shipped by truck, reported that shipping volumes fell 4.8% in January compared to December and were 2.5% lower than January 2012. After the break, a look at political headlines, and then we'll sit down with Senator Larry Teague. He's the co-chair of the Joint Budget Committee. Are lawmakers ready to roll with the budget? We'll find out right after this.
I don't think it's going to be an easy conversation because they are very strong-willed. I think it's going to be important to us that we know that you're somewhere in a facility that looks after you, has compassion, has care, and you respect it. I mean, I'd love to look after them. I'd love to be able to take care of them, but I don't think I could. That'd be a wrong choice on my part.
Arkansas's skilled nursing and assisted living centers provide quality care for our seniors.
Farm Bureau helps protect its members in more ways than you might think. They've always been the voice of agriculture in Arkansas, working on behalf of folks like me when nobody else would. And Farm Bureau stands for the values that Arkansas families care about. They've protected my right to farm and make a living, which helps everybody who likes food on the table. You know what they say, Arkansas counts on agriculture, and agriculture counts on Farm Bureau.
The Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The State Chamber AIA is the leading voice for business at the state capitol and serves as the primary business advocate on all issues affecting Arkansas employers. Our mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent anti-business legislation, regulations, and rules. Now more than ever, business matters. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
The lottery. Arkansas and Oklahoma find some common ground, and an old hat tries a new venture. Let's run through our political headlines. The Senate Education Committee passed companion bills Wednesday, creating a tiered scholarship approach for the Arkansas Academic Challenge Scholarship Lottery Program. The bills, Senate Bill 294 by Senator Johnny Key and House Bill 1295 by Representative Jeremy Gillum, would reduce the current lottery scholarship awards of $4,500 and $2,250. Under the bill, scholarship recipients attending four-year schools would receive $2,000 their freshman year and an additional $1,000 each additional year for three more years, culminating with a $5,000 award their senior years. Student at two-year schools would receive $2,000 per year. Attorney General Dustin McDaniel said Wednesday that Arkansas and Oklahoma officials have agreed to conduct a comprehensive study of phosphorus concentrations in the Illinois River watershed as both states work to improve water quality in the region. The two states have been at odds for years over water quality conditions in the watershed. Oklahoma's previous attorney general sued poultry firms, some in Arkansas, claiming contamination from water runoff on farming operations. Arkansas has maintained that Oklahoma's phosphorus standard is unattainable. Political strategist Alice Stewart will start a new political radio talk show beginning Monday, February 25th. The Alice Stewart Show will be featured on newly branded talk show radio station KHTE 96.5, The Voice, in Central Arkansas. The show will air from 6 to 8 a.m. every morning, Monday through Friday, and it will focus on Arkansas and national political news of the day. When we come back, I'll sit down with co-chair of the Joint Budget Committee, Senator Larry Teague of Nashville. How are the numbers shaping up? We'll find out right after this.
Noble Strategies is a bipartisan state and federal government affairs firm with a successful track record of providing effective advocacy for business, government, and nonprofit entities. Noble Strategies provides service in areas such as lobbying, public affairs, trade association management, and marketing campaigns. Learn more at noblestrat.com.
I was looking for a bank that could best protect my finances.
This shared my passion for my business's potential.
A bank that offered investment expertise.
Lending support. Insurance guidance.
A bank that delivered full financial support.
That's how I found True Balance.
True Balance.
From my bank.
From my bank.
Delta Trust and Bank. The expertise to meet all your financial needs.
One of the real advantages of Electric Cooperative's membership is having a voice in our state's energy future.
Not a week goes by without important energy issues making headlines. These are issues that need to be discussed. And you should know that as policies are being developed, the cooperatives are looking out for our members, advocating what's best for you.
We are your friends and neighbors.
We are your local electric company.
The Electric Cooperatives.
We are
Arkansas.
I'm joined now by Senator Larry T. He's the co-chair of the Joint Budget Committee. Thank you for being with us.
I appreciate you asking me.
All right, let's talk a vote that you guys took this afternoon first before we get into budget stuff and some other things. Senator Brian King's voter ID bill.
Senate Bill 2.
Very partisan in that Republicans support it. Democrats typically do not. You are one of two Democrats who actually voted for it. What's your support for the bill? Where does it come from?
Well, mostly the support comes from because the great majority of people I represent support the concept. I don't know that I'm convinced it's necessary. When I go vote, the ladies at the poll say, let me see your ID. And I've known those ladies 50 years.
They're still not sure who you are. Yeah.
So I don't know how necessary it is. And as I recall on the voter page that I signed from the clerk's office, you know, they check ID provider or not. But the people I represent support the concept, and they're the people who elected me and who I try to represent.
All right, let's switch to some budget measures here. Where do you guys have been in session for 6 weeks now. It feels longer, quite frankly, for some of us that are covering
the
session.
You ought to be in the middle of it.
Where do you think you are in the budget process? There still seems to be a long ways to go, which is typical in a session, but this one, for some reason, feels a little longer in the drag.
I think the budget is moving not slower than normal, but we haven't tackled any of the big subjects yet. And my assumption is until we decide what we're going to do with Medicaid expansion, we're not going to. We're talking and different groups are talking you in the back rooms, but my assumption is you don't get to DHS, you don't get to education, you don't get to those big six, if you will, until we get down and figure out whether we're going to expand Medicaid or not. My assumption is that doesn't happen until the governor gets back from D.C. and his visit with Sebelius, I think Saturday. And so we're moving maybe slow, but not horribly slow. We're getting stuff out. Sometimes we snag up. One of the things I think that we're doing in budget is we got some freshmen who are members of budget, and that's fairly unusual, though it's becoming more usual. Mm-hmm. And they're in a learning curve. They're trying to figure out what we're doing and why we're doing it. And so sometimes we get hung up with questions and dealing with that, but that's important that we all have some understanding of what we're doing. So I'm not uptight about it at this point. And you may remember when I chaired special language, we met at 6:30 one time, and I have no problem with meeting, coming back after we adjourn, and meeting till 9 or 10 at night to take care of business when that time comes.
Let's pull ourselves back to Medicaid for a little bit. The governor, as you indicated, is going to go meet with the federal Department of Human Services, Health and Human Services Secretary. What question do you want answered? What would help you understand what the Medicaid budget picture will look like? What's the resolution that you need?
Well, I think from the budget point of view, we know that it's 100% funding through 17 and then 90% through 20. But I think that one of the things that the governors and the Department of Human Services tell us is that expansion helps fill in the deficit. And you know that, you remember that deficit started out at a $400 million mm-hmm. 2 or 3 years ago, and then it was
down
300.
Now
it's 61 now. And there's some who doubt that it's that much. But I think until we know whether we're going to get some help out of the expansion, I just think that we're hung up there until we know what we're doing there.
Do you think that the political will is there among 75% of the Senate, 75% of the House to expand Medicaid? I can tell you from my vantage point, I don't see that.
If you're asking me if we voted on it this afternoon, would it pass? It wouldn't come anywhere close, I don't think. I think it's that. But I think there are a goodly number of legislators on both sides of the aisle who are waiting for the answers to their questions that they've given Governor Beebe and that he is going to talk to Sebelius about, try to bring some answers back. So I don't know that it passes ever, but we got to get to a point that we're willing to say yay or nay. Let's either say yes, we're going to do it and move on, or let's say no, we're not going to do it and move on. I don't know how long we can just continue to talk about it without just getting on with business.
And you think this Sebelius meeting with the governor is what's going to give you guys that direction?
Well, I think that if the governor gets some legitimate give from Sebelius, and I don't know what that give is, maybe in a perfect world for some, it would be that he lets you lower it from 138 to 100%. There are other schools, other factions who would like to see something different. But I do think that legislators need to I was in a meeting where they posed a whole bunch of questions to him. And most of them good, valid questions. They want their questions answered. One question that I don't understand is when we talk about that if we don't expand Medicaid, that those people between 100% of poverty and 138% of poverty would then be able to get coverage on the exchange,
correct,
on the health exchange at a subsidized rate. Now, oftentimes I hear people say that rate would be $26 or $29 or $50. The numbers I've seen projected for the exchange, like for a 50-year-old woman, $1,400, $1,500 a month. Now, even with a whole bunch of subsidy, you're not going to get that down to $26 or $50 or whatever. So that was the question I posed is, Governor, is it true that if we don't expand and if these people between 100 and 138%, and as you know, we're talking about the working poor. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people who make minimum wage or barely over that. Is it true that those people, those constituents of mine, are going to be able to go to the exchange and buy insurance for $25 a month? In my mind, that can't happen. Mm-hmm. You remember in real life, I am a independent insurance agent, small agent, don't sell a lot of health insurance, but I just don't see anybody going and buying a $25 insurance policy, even with a federal
subsidy. Too big of a gap. Do you think this Medicaid issue is just too challenging, too difficult for you guys to make a decision one way or the other? Do you think it could get to the point where you still don't have enough clarity from the feds and you just say, it's time for us to just decide. We can't make a decision on this based on what we have. Let's don't do it.
Well, I hope at some point we vote, just so we can say, yeah, we did try it, or no, we didn't. Yes, we want to do this, or no, we didn't. But I do think if we don't get the answers that some of them want from Sebelius, if we don't get some give from her, if the governor doesn't bring home some sort of give in the program, that it's very unlikely we'll get it done.
Where do you personally stand on the concept?
You know, I've not staked out any ground yet, but let me just tell you, I am a rural advocate. You know, I'm a product of rural Arkansas. I represent rural Arkansas, and I love rural Arkansas. I already am very aware of the healthcare problems that we have in rural Arkansas. It's a long way to the hospital. It's a long way to specialists. And I believe that if we don't expand it, our few remaining rural hospitals are going to be at risk. So it's I haven't staked out my ground yet because I don't know as much as I want to know about it. Mm-hmm. But it'll be hard for me to be against it because I understand that if we lose our rural hospitals, we brought our last job to rural Arkansas, our last corporate job. And that when a corporation who has a plant in Nashville is looking to expand and they're checking off their checklist over where to do that, and they look and see there's no health care in Nashville or there's no health care in wherever, then they're going to set that aside and move on to the next plant where there is health care for their employees. It's an important issue in corporate America, I believe.
Let's talk about another corporate issue that you have brought a bill forward in this session. It's to Buy American. Buy American Steel, Buy American Iron.
Yeah.
What are you wanting to accomplish here?
Well, I come from the premise of that if so many companies, corporations have moved their manufacturing facilities overseas where there's cheaper labor, cheaper, where they can create things cheaper. I come from the position that we ought to support those companies who've made the decision to keep manufacturing in the United States. I've come from the position that those companies are worth us supporting with our public dollars. Those public those dollars turn manufacturing jobs. I was looking at the numbers this morning, and I think I lost it, but about 33% of manufacturing jobs create more manufacturing jobs. And so I believe it's worth supporting those companies who've made that decision to stay in the country and do their manufacturing, who've resisted the lure of cheaper labor or cheaper.
Where's the pushback coming on this bill that you're getting? Is it from people that say it's going to drive up the cost of some projects when you could do some things, use some materials
overseas? The first bill I filed, I didn't have a good bill, just to be honest with you. I'd worked on it, but it wasn't good, and it certainly wasn't clear enough. When you get people having questions, and you've seen a feeding frenzy before where you get one question, then two, and then 20, and then 40, and that's kind of what happened.
It's about when you pull your bill down, isn't it?
That's kind of what happened in this case. Everybody, as they looked, said, well, what does this mean? Now, I think the bill, as it was originally written, said the components had to be made in America. I don't think that said that the pressure dial for the heating and air system had to be made in America. I think it said the whole unit had to be made in America. But no way, at least I haven't figured out yet how to make that clear. I think the bill in the next week or so will wind up being a bill for just American Iron and Steel. I almost wish it was a bill that said Arkansas Iron and Steel. We've got good steel production. We're going to get another plant, and I like to support plants that are here, that are native to Arkansas. Now, one of the things that scares people is there's a provision that says if it makes a project cost 25% more, then you don't have to do it. But up to 25%, you would buy the American steel. That makes people uncomfortable. But the truth is we have a very competitive American steel market. What we're trying to do is stop the Chinese steel who comes in. Chinese own the plant. They pay the workers very little. They transport it. They can sell it for whatever they want. And we see examples nationwide, sure, of them coming in and doing that. Trying to stop those things from happening.
Now, when you did some of this with some knowledge that there might be a super project coming to Arkansas that would be a producer of steel.
I did.
Was that in mind when you did this?
Not necessarily. The truth is I was somewhere, probably some annual conference, and visiting with some people, and they were talking about it, and I said, hey, I like that idea. Mm-hmm. That's a great idea. Come talk to me. And of course, the Nucor people are very interested in it, and so they sent some people to talk to me, and again, I just think it's worth doing.
Now you may have some Big River Steel people interested.
Big River Steel people.
Once a scrapper, always a scrapper.
Amen,
right?
Brother.
City
Amen.
He's Senator Larry Teague. He's the co-chair of the Joint Budget Committee. Thank you for being with us.
I appreciate it, Robbie. See ya.
And we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Talk Business Arkansas. I'm Robbie Brock. Take care.
Talk Business Arkansas is brought to you by the Arkansas Farm Bureau, the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas, Noble Strategies, the Arkansas Healthcare Association, and Delta Trust and Bank.